Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, all. We have a great show for you today, all about how social media is toxic for women and girls. But before we get into that, I've got a quickie little commercial for the Sicilian Inheritance. Now, I am sometimes bad at tooting my own horn, or I'm not, I can do it. I've been telling you this is the book of the summer, but sometimes I get nervous and I get embarrassed. That's why it is so important to have friends who will toot your horn for you, who will do all of the tooting, toot, 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 toot. And one of those friends for me is Nora McInerney of the podcast Terrible Thanks for Asking. She made these commercials for the Sicilian Inheritance for me that are on her podcast, and they're so good that I'm gonna play it on my podcast. So here it is.
When I'm looking at the next 12 months of my life, what I do not have on the books and what is impossible for me to have on the books is a trip to Sicily. However, the next best thing to having my own adventure in Sicily was reading Joe Piazza's new novel, The Sicilian Inheritance. It is a vacation in a book. If your vacations were sexy murder mysteries that also dive deep into generational trauma, but not in too heavy of a way, it is the perfect book to take on a plane. It is the perfect book to read next to your public pool while taking breaks to yell at your kids. It is the perfect book to get you out of a reading slump, and it is available now wherever you get books.
As I said, today we are talking about how social media is incredibly toxic for women and girls. I say these things all the time, and sometimes I start to feel like a real conspiracy theorist, like the social media version of a prepper telling you to build a tunnel under your house with lots of canned goods and a generator. But this is something I truly believe, and my guest today explains it incredibly well in her new book, Over the Influence. Over the Influence. Same name as my Substack, actually. This means it'll be really easy for you to remember. Over the Influence, the book, looks at how social media is affecting every single aspect of the lives of women and girls, from our parenting to how we date, our careers, and our physical safety. But it also gives practical tips about what we can do about it, what we can do as users, as creators, what lawmakers can do, and what we need to be demanding from tech companies in order to solve these problems.
My name is Kara Alimo. I'm an associate professor of communication at Fairleigh Dickinson University, and I am the author of Over the Influence: Why Social Media is Toxic for Women and Girls and How We Can Take It Back.
This is a really big topic. It's really big. We might need to have you on again.
I love that.
Also, I've been calling your university Fairleigh Dickinson University for my entire life, I think because of the Fudge Books by Judy Blume, maybe.
Oh.
But really happy to be corrected. And I love anyone in academia that is tackling this subject, because some very big universities that I will not name have told me they're not that interested in this subject. So good on you guys for going after it, because I think it is the biggest media and communications issue of our time.
I completely agree with you. And, you know, on a personal note, when I started writing my book, I, as a mom, was thinking about how to find answers for how I should handle my own daughter's use of social media. And having finished this book, that is no longer my biggest fear. What terrifies me now is that even if I can help my daughters get their own use of social media right, they still will have to live in the world that social networks have wrought. And the shocking thing that I discovered when I was researching this book and talking to women and girls across the country about their experiences and talking to experts is that I actually think that social media is making the world less safe for women and is normalizing the abuse of women and is normalizing depriving us of rights and resources offline.
100%. Absolutely. Let's dig into that first. How is social media making the world less safe for women? Again, huge thing in all the ways?
In a lot of the ways. One of the things that really shocked me was a recent CDC report, which found a 17% increase in the percentage of teen girls who said that they had been forced to have sex. And you think about this. And this has happened over a 10-year period as the use of social media has skyrocketed. But I think that one thing that we've seen in recent years is more acceptance of overt misogyny on social networks. And so, you know, this is all over TikTok and other mainstream apps in particular as part of youth culture, where it's just considered hilarious to make these jokes about, for instance, violently abusing women. And, you know, you don't see this with other forms of extremism on, you know, mainstream TikTok. It's not considered hilarious to joke about beheading people. But for some reason, it is when we talk about abusing women. And we all know that women and girls come up against all sorts of abuse on social media. But what I think it's done now is normalized violence against women and abusing women offline. And, you know, there's a huge body of literature that shows us that people who are exposed to violence in the media are actually more likely to commit acts of violence offline. And so a lot of people talk about, you know, what happens IRL in real life. And I've come to believe that that term is not only antiquated, it's also really dangerous because it suggests that what's happening on social media is not real life, when in fact, what's happening on social networks is affecting my safety and the safety of my girls and the way that people treat women and girls in every corner of our lives.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that 100%, and I talk about it all the time. How old are your girls?
My daughters are very young. They're still toddlers, but I'm worried early, and I think for good reason.
No, I mean, truth, right? My kids are young. I've got a six-year-old boy, a four-year-old girl, and a one-year-old girl, and I'm terrified for all of them. It's so funny. I was on my phone doing something. I mean, I don't know. We do all the things on our phone. And my son said, oh, are you going to post that to TikTok? And I'm not a big TikToker, which was hilarious to me because I'm like, how the F do you know about TikTok? This isn't going anywhere. The train has left the station. So the best thing we can do is learn as much about it and be incredibly critical of it and learn how to protect our children from it. And that's exactly what you're doing in this book. Talk to me a little bit about the research that you did and the folks that you talked to for this.
So I talked to experts in social media and mental health. I also talked to ordinary women and girls about their experiences. And yes, Joe, I think you're exactly right. It is not too early, because one of the things that I came to realize is that I have to be talking to the parents of my kids' friends early, very soon, so that we all collectively agree to hold off on allowing our kids to get phones until they're older. Because once a few of my daughter's friends have phones, this battle is completely lost. There's no way I can win it. And one of the people I talked to was Jonathan Haidt, and he argues that kids should not be on social networks until they're at least 16. Part of the reason is because there is a documented association between using social media and lower life satisfaction among girls between the ages of 11 and 13. And that, of course, is the age when they typically go through puberty.
And I mean, this is not like I'm unhappy because I'm on social media. I know that. I'm like, and no, really. I mean, I'm way unhappier. I've noticed a definite depression setting in. I'm on social media more right now than I've ever been because I've got a book coming out in April, as I'm sure you are right
Same.
Now. Right. And so while I would love to put the phone down, I'm also marketing constantly. And so I'm on social media more than ever, and I'm more depressed than ever. I'm more depressed and I'm more anxious. And I know it is because I am on social media more. And yet it's my job and I can't stop. So if I'm feeling this way as a relatively well-adjusted 43-year-old, you know, allegedly successful person in the world, I cannot imagine what this does to the brains of teenage girls. I mean, walk me through what it is like in their heads when they are on social media.
Right. So first of all, remember what it is like to be an adolescent girl. We know that in particular for girls, their confidence plummets around the time that they go through puberty. We know that they are very attuned to their appearances and their social status. And so it's a pretty awful, tough time to begin with. And now enter Instagram and enter TikTok, where all of the sudden, you know, they're watching videos of parties that they weren't invited to. On Snapchat, a lot of girls talk about how they can see the locations of their friends in real time. And so they know when they get together and they're the one who's not invited. On Instagram, everyone's lives look far more glamorous than they actually are. I interviewed one girl, now a woman, her name is Vivian, who says that she got her eating disorder from Instagram as a teenager. She was an early adopter when Instagram launched, and she was really into fitness. And so she posted a picture of herself doing a handstand. And that picture ended up being shared by a so-called Fitspiration page. So she started following them. And she decided she wanted the Instagram body. And you can imagine she is now a woman in her 20s who continues to struggle with an eating disorder, right? Because these things rarely just completely go away. She works part-time as a physical trainer, and she tells me that her clients, of course, bring her pictures of other women on Instagram, often a couple decades younger than them, and say, I want to get that body. When, of course, we know that the so-called Instagram body is usually only achieved through surgery. It's not the way most women look.
Not just surgery, but fucking Photoshop, man. Photoshop and angles. And those pictures are adjusted. And I was saying the other day we did an episode about Attack of the Fitfluencers. And I said, I mean, I got a jiggly mama belly, and I can make that shit look good in a picture if I suck in and I stand the right way.
Of course you can. One of the big things I call on tech companies to do is just to signal to us, to tell us when photos we're seeing are manipulated. And that would be a signal to all of us, but in particular to young impressionable girls, that these are not pictures of people's actual bodies. That's not what humans actually look like. And by the way, you know, what someone looks like is the least interesting thing about them and not what we should be judging them for at all.
Totally. But that is such a good idea, right? If pictures couldn't be manipulated in the way that they are and posted on a site, or if there was some kind of warning that said those were manipulated, then at least we would start to think about them in a different way.
Exactly. Or even just a different color frame or a little icon. And then we would say, oh, that's an aspirational picture. That is not a picture of what this woman's body really looks like.
I love that idea. And you have a lot of ideas for how tech companies can change to be better, which they won't, because capitalism be capitalism. And they just want to make money off of us and our children. And they don't give a shit but you also have ideas for parents about how we can protect our children. And I want to dig into all of that after we take a quick break.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, and we are back. We've scared the bejesus out of everyone about social media. And now I want to talk about some solutions. What should tech companies be doing? I mean, I know that they're not going to do these things, but we can say them out loud and we can pressure lawmakers to try to enact laws to make them change. So what are some things that you've learned?
So I would love for tech companies to actually have standards for what kind of content should be shown to kids. I think part of the problem is that they can't tell. Their algorithms probably can't differentiate between whether content about body image is good for kids or is promoting eating disorders. And I think they need to call in some experts, set some standards, publish them publicly so that content creators know what they can and cannot do, and then have human moderators review this kind of content before they show it to kids. But let me just say, I agree with you. We cannot trust tech companies to protect our kids. And so I also think that, sadly, a lot of this is on us as parents. And part of it is, you know, a lot of us did not grow up on Instagram and TikTok, and a lot of parents don't understand these apps and don't know where to begin to talk to their kids about. So one of the first things I suggest is sit down with your kid, ask them to pull out their phone and scroll through Instagram or TikTok together and search for content and consume content about stuff your kid is interested in. Because we know that Instagram can give kids eating disorders. I absolutely believe that. But I also believe that social apps are places where kids can develop interests that turn into careers or can get involved in really important causes. So watch some healthy content together. And the cool thing about that, as we know, is that algorithms are programmed to show people more of what they think the person likes. And so if you watch this kind of content with your kids, these algorithms will show your kids more such content. I think it's really important to talk to kids about why we shouldn't judge anyone, especially ourselves, for their bodies. And one of my favorite authors is Kate Mann, who has this new book called Unshrinking Out, and it's about our society's fat phobia. And, you know, there's this moment in the book where she talks about her young daughter, who's about the same age as ours. And she says she just took Instagram out and showed her bodies of people, people of all different races, all different sizes, all different levels of ability. And she didn't pass judgment on what they looked like, but instead she just talked about how grateful she was that they were in the world with us. And I think that's a really, really cool and interesting way of teaching kids not to judge people based on their bodies. But I do think we need some of those deeper conversations about how, you know, we can't control our weights, generally speaking. You know, kids who are adopted end up with very similar weights to their biological parents, not their adoptive parents, and why it's just kind of superficial and lame to judge people for their appearances. I also think it's important to set the ground rules with our kids about how they can use social media, because they'll probably have some really reasonable and smart proposals for you maybe social media is something that kids use when they're done with their homework as a treat at the end of the day. But I also think that probably a lot of exceptions will be called for. I've definitely scrolled on my own phone when I've been waiting for news about a sick family member or something huge was happening in the world and I was following the news. And I think it's reasonable to talk to kids about when you're going to break the rules or when they are going to be allowed to use their phone doing their homework because they need to research topics. So I think having these ongoing conversations is just super important.
Totally, totally. And we just can't bury our heads in the sand is the thing anymore. And we're going to have to be flexible. And I like what you said about letting kids use social media as a treat so that it is a treat and it's not just something you're getting all the time, right? Like, I don't let my kids have unlimited popsicles, even though I buy the sugar-free kind and they try to get unlimited popsicles. They do. They're always open in that freezer drawer and I'm always like, shut that shit, which is why my son went on a play date the other day and they wrote shit, shit, shit all over a piece of paper and the parent sent it to me. So that is my fault. That is my fault and it's just a cross I have to bear. But much like we talk about bad language with children from a very early age, we need to be talking about social media. It just needs to be this thing that we acknowledge as the massive elephant in the room from a very young age, because our kids are also watching us stare at our phones all the time. They don't know what we're doing. And so I think we need to make it a really robust and continuing conversation and not shy away from the bad stuff. I say to my six-year-old when he goes on YouTube, and he does go on YouTube because it's easy to use and he wants to look up how to make a squirrel maze or what is the square root of 1237. And if I catch him watching something that I don't love, I'm like, oh, is that crap? Are you watching the crap that's on YouTube? Again, their potty language is my fault. I know this. But we set boundaries for everything else in our lives, in their lives. Why is it so crazy to talk about setting those boundaries for social media?
I think part of it is my kids often go ballistic when I take away a screen.
So mad. And so mad. It's like I just physically harmed them.
Yes. I mean, they are just as addictive, I believe, as those popsicles. And so I do think that just in order to be savvy and make things easier for ourselves, the other thing that we have to think about as parents is giving our kids healthy offline things to do, which would just naturally reduce the amount of time they spend with screens. I think a lot of parents we know don't let their kids get together with friends all the time in person and worry about their safety when they leave the house. But I actually think that if you leave your kid in their bedroom, they could be on TikTok or Instagram having far more dangerous experiences than they would be if they got together with their friends at the park or even at the mall. And so I do think it's unfortunately on us to keep kids busy with healthier stuff, which, you know, you can't really be on your screen when you're playing soccer.
Totally, totally. And I mean, my house has become the house of too many children, not just because we had an unexpected third baby, but because I have been trying to let this be the house where my kids have play dates all the time. And I'm like, yeah, just like, you know, drop the kids off, let them run around and build forts. And because otherwise, they will gravitate towards screens, and I want them to have this really robust, play-based childhood, but also without me helicoptering them. Like, I don't want to give them activities to do all the time or necessarily do them with them all the time either.
Absolutely. I think that that's, like, just another burden on parents. And, you know, and part of it, too, is that, you know, our schools have failed kids, right? So they're not really getting these educations in schools. I created, now that you know how to say it, a new program where students can study social media at Fairleigh Dickinson University. And one of the things that really shocks me is that almost none of the college students I teach have ever gotten an education in protecting themselves online and using social media before they walk through the door of my classroom.
It's insane to me.
It's terrifying.
It's terrifying. I mean, the project that I proposed when I was talking to one of the the schools near me when I was thinking about getting a PhD in communication was that we need to start media literacy in kindergarten. It should be a program in schools, and that media literacy includes social media and also what is news and how do we absorb news and how do we absorb all of these things and also set our own boundaries for it. And it was so funny. The person I talked to was like, oh, well, they're just not that interested in kids or in social media. And I'm like, wow, oh, cool. Well, yeah, let's just look. I mean, just let the world go to fucking shit, man. It's cool. Don't worry about it. So I love that you're doing that. But I wish we could start it when kids were in kindergarten. Take the onus off the parents at some point.
Right. So if your kids or my kids were growing up in Finland right now, they would be learning from elementary school, from the time they were taught how to read and write. They would learn things like how content is designed to prey on their emotion and how to spot fake news. And it's particularly terrifying that kids in the U.S. largely aren't getting these educations because of the arrival of deep fakes, right? And so we know that they're going to be a force in the election. But we also know that kids are totally unprepared for how to handle them themselves. I live in New Jersey, and there was a big story this past fall about these boys in a local high school who decided to create nude deepfakes of their female classmate.
Oh, God, I haven't heard this. But of course they, I mean, of course they are, because, I mean, look, I also don't want to act like any of this is new, because if boys could have done this when we went to high school, they would have.
They would have.
And I do remember, like, boys would get a hold of a Playboy or a penthouse or something, and then they would cut out pictures of girls' heads and paste them on the penthouse Playboy thing. So, like, let's not pretend that boys have changed or people have changed. The social media is changing things.
But, you know, I read this Wall Street Journal article about this whole episode. It happened in Westfield, New Jersey. And the thing I couldn't get over was that some parents just thought it was a youthful transgression.
Oh, no, your kid's being a pervert.
Yeah. And what we have to teach our kids, because schools aren't, is that, you know, when a woman's nude images end up online, she is at greater risk of sexual assault. It is going to be harder for her to find a job. It is going to be harder for her to date. She is at greater risk of depression. She is at greater risk of suicide. This isn't funny. And so I just think it's so important for us to be talking to our kids about why they can never engage with this kind of content. Then there's, of course, all the child porn laws, right? If your kid's sex, they could technically be prosecuted for creating child porn of themselves. And so since they're not getting these educations in schools, parents really have to be up on this and have to know to talk to their kids about all these risks.
Totally. Totally. What are the things that you have seen talking to parents that are incredibly effective?
So I think keeping an open dialogue is incredibly effective. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The number one thing that I heard, and it came from an attorney who handles cases when things go wrong, mm-hmm. Carrie Goldberg, is she said to me that, you know, she sees cases of when a kid is being, say, sextorted, right? So that's where someone has established an emotional relationship with them online, convinced, a teen girl to share an intimate image, and then they come back and say, Venmo me $10,000, or this is going to be texted to all of your classmates and put online, and it'll never come off. And when this happens, Carrie told me that the most dangerous thing is when kids are afraid to go to their parents because, of course, they're afraid that their parents will take away their phones. And that's what prevents them from getting help. And, of course, the longer something like this goes on, the worse it becomes and the harder it becomes to get images offline once they're posted. And so I think the number one thing is knowing that your kid will come to you when they need help. And you won't take their phone away. And you just have to tell them that. And you have to promise that. And you have to actually live up to it. Having that open dialogue is really important. Being up on what kids are talking about online is really important. So recently it's been, you know, all the Sephora kids TikToks that have tweens hoarding hoodie products. or the Botox baby stuff that's all over social media that has young people signing up for Botox, which is totally dangerous and unnecessary in your 20s, right? We have to know that this is what's trending and that this is what our kids are being exposed to. And then we have to talk about it and head it off.
Right. We need a basic literacy. We can't just bury our heads in the sand and say, oh, well, you know, I don't go on TikTok or I don't go on Instagram. We have to go on so that we know what our kids are consuming and how we can talk to them about it. And that sucks because, again, I mean, God, when this book is out, I think I'm just going to quit. Like I said, it makes me feel terrible all the time. But like I said, the train has left the station. And so if we're not literate in this massive form of media, then there's nothing we can do to protect our kids from it.
That's right. But I also think that, you know, this is the answer a lot of people give women when we complain about social networks. They say, oh, well, if they're so toxic, just don't use them. And as you and I know, we're promoting our books on social media. Social media is a place where women can empower ourselves. And so I really reject this argument that it's on us to leave these apps rather than on being on tech companies and lawmakers to fix so that we can use them the same way men use these apps and these platforms to promote their work and to advocate for issues we care about and to engage with people all over the world. I just don't think we should have to give that up just because these networks have been built so terribly.
Amen, Mama. I agree. I totally agree. Tell everyone where they can find you and your book and order your book, which is out this week. Because this is such an incredible resource for parents of not just girls, but boys, because we also need to, I mean, we need to teach boys the same things about social media, but we need to be teaching boys how to care for women in a world filled with social media.
Oh, my goodness. This is a book for parents of kids of all genders, but it's also about how social media is affecting our careers and our dating. I have to come back, Joe, and talk to you more. But for now, my book, Over the Influence, Why Social Media is Toxic for Women and Girls and How We Can Take It Back, is available pretty much anywhere you buy books. My website is caraalimo.com, and I'll be on a huge national book tour. I also have a bunch of free virtual events if you're interested in coming to them and talking about these things more. And you can find me on, of course, Instagram, X, and Facebook.
Wonderful. Yeah, no, we have to have you back on. I do want to hear more about social media and dating. It's something that we haven't touched yet, and we should touch it more.
Yeah. So my theory for the reason why a record number of Americans are single right now is because of dating apps.
Oh, all right. Well, more to come. Come back on. Go do your book stuff, sell a bunch of books, and then come back on and talk to me about how social media is ruining yet another thing in our lives.
I look forward to it.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, you put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor, because you know the bigger the fight, the better the reward. Medela, the mark of the fight. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.